Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Coming to you live from beneath the ruins of Valve, it's Puckle Movie Club.
And welcome to Puckle Movie Club. I am your host, Ethan, here today with my co-host,
Locke.
And we're here to discuss a Pokemon movie, perhaps a lesser known one, maybe?
I would think it's a little lesser known.
It's certainly not a mainline movie. This is Pokemon Mewtwo Returns, which is actually just called Mewtwo Returns, I believe. I'm actually going to have to look that up because I haven't looked up the actual official name.
I do not remember a title screen showing both Pokemon and Mewtwo Returns.
It just says Mewtwo Returns on Bulbapedia, so I'm going to choose to believe that. But yeah, this is a sequel to a Pokemon movie you've already covered. Pokemon, the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. And I think this is actually kind of a decent setup for something we're going to be doing the first month of, or the first 3 months of next year, which is we're going to be covering a trilogy in the near future. So, yeah, I figured it
Very
was kind
exciting.
Kind of apt to do a sequel and examine, like, what does a Pokemon movie sequel actually look like, you know? And how coherent is the through line in these movies?
Spoiler alert, unlike most Pokemon movies, they do this extremely well.
All right. Yeah, so we're getting the hot opinions in there right away, because we got pretty strong opinions about this movie. Movie, of course, came out in 2001, December 5th in the States. So, you know, 2 years after the first one, this sets you right in Johto. We're in Johto for this movie. What was going on for you in 2001?
2001? I don't remember. That's jumping way back to, I suppose I was playing Silver and Gold. So I would have still been in middle school, probably.
I was a baby. I was functionally a baby because I was 6 years old. I just assume anybody under the age of like 10 is an infant. It cannot look out for themselves at all.
That makes sense. I'm pretty sure I was in about middle school at that point, because I remember sixth grade for me is when Red and Blue came out. So Gold and Silver, which would be our Johto region, would have been the 2000s, and that is probably what I was playing at the time.
All right. I know for a fact I was playing that Crystal, so because I think that was late 2001. So, anyways, are you ready to get into the actual story?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the film opens with a recap of the first movie done with a monologue by Mewtwo. It pretty much covers the entire thing from his perspective. A little bit redundant, because I think it should be assumed that you've seen the first movie. But what do you think about this?
Considering it's the only direct movie sequel up to this point, I think it's really nice that they made sure you were aware that it was, in fact, a sequel. Because, I mean, even though it was a couple years... only a couple years for the people watching the movies as they came out, This one I don't think was a theater release.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this was either a VHS or like maybe it aired on television or something. I know in Japan it aired on TV first. But yeah, it's not like a mainline Pokemon movie, so it's somewhat distinct in that regard. But I don't know. I think it's a pretty well done recap of the first movie. It hits the main parts, kind of makes Ash seem like a savior type figure. Which I guess that was kind of what they were going for in the first movie, but it's a little bit amped up. And kind of like some retroactive changes to what exactly was going on between Mewtwo and Mew, but whatever, what are you going to do? The movie opens with the recap, and Mewtwo says now that Giovanni is the only one who is aware that Mewtwo exists, and Giovanni pretty abruptly finds him, he locates him this barren wasteland, apparently, but it's not really a barren wasteland. Like they say, the scientists say it's uninhabitable that Giovanni's with, but I don't buy it one bit.
Yeah, given the what we learn later in the movie, it seems a little ridiculous that they would say it was completely uninhabitable. I understand it's surrounded by the gale force winds and shifting weather, but other than that, there's nothing that makes this an uninhabitable area. I was amused and slightly disappointed that as they kept zooming in on the satellite, we did not have a Team Rocket grunt going like, enhance, click, enhance, click.
Yeah, we're right into it, though. We immediately get exactly what the conflict is, which is Giovanni wants Mewtwo again, and Mewtwo quite literally returns. So we get Mewtwo on a cliffside monologuing about how he doesn't belong in the world and like what is his place, and pretty touching on the similar themes as he was touching on the end of the last movie. He's trying to find a home for him and his clones, and he thinks he might have finally found it. Go ahead.
He's very much brooding. He is all of the edgelord that we expect him to be.
Get ready for a whole lot of brooding in cliffsides and talking to his disciples and stuff. From there we go to Ash and Co, who are visiting Purity Canyon, which is like this allegedly very beautiful, stunning natural landscape, and there's a bus that runs once a month, and they're just moments too late getting to it. I forgot to mention, I'd be remiss not to make note of the fact that this is the infamous drying pan scene happens here.
Yes.
Where they get the weather kicks up, because this is a part of this beautiful location is that the weather is totally nuts and unpredictable, and they were woefully unprepared for this, but Brock's got the drying pan, so that's all that matters. they missed the bus to Purity Canyon, but they meet this woman, Luna, who just got off of the bus, and Brock makes a pass at her, of course. And this is where we get the line that you are super fond of. I smell what you're cooking, Brock.
Can you smell what Brock is cooking?
He's cooking up a hot brew of love, or he wants to. I think this is actually one of the funnier movies for Brock. He gets some decent goofs.
The whole movie has pretty decent goofs. There wasn't any of them that I just was like, no, this was a terrible. I think this is the last hurrah of Pokemon's good pun game before it just becomes a little bit ridiculous throughout the rest of the movies.
They're not as much of a stretch, you know? Like, the jokes make sense, and they're not, like, overly corny or anything, which I think is great. Luna invites them into this cabin, which is set up by the bus company in case you miss the bus, and you can wait there for an entire month in this cabin for the next bus. This is a poorly run operation.
Who pays for this? Like,
wait, is this part of the socialist Pokemon world at work here? Like, is this just another government-run agency that's a total disaster? Fortunately for Ash and Co, they miss the bus, because the bus gets thrown into the air by a gigantic gust of wind, and then mysteriously the bus gets slowly dropped back down on the ground, and we learn that Mewtwo stopped the bus from falling off the cliff, and his disciples
with his psychic TV.
Yes. And he sees him from afar. He's like, and his disciples are like, "Hey, did you do that because you care about people?" And he's like, "Absolutely not. I could never care about people. Because I'm a brooding monster."
But do I care about people?
Impossible. I could never care about people. So we go back to the cabin, and Luna explains how they got to wait for a month, as we said. But she's like, "Hey, do you want to drink some incredibly pure water?" Like, it's the thing about this place is that it has this amazingly pure water, which is supposed to have healing properties or whatever. And they all get a taste of it, and they all start absolutely tripping. They're tripping like crazy.
Except Ash, who is totally immune.
It's because Ash is straight edge.
That's probable.
If
it's not Pokemon, he don't need it.
You can find my anti-drug Ash fanfic on pokefix.org or whatever. Anyways.
On the dark side of Puckle.
Yes. Puckled After Dark, which is presented by Puckle Movie Club. So they're like, "Hey, is there any other way for us to get to this valley or canyon?" Which are two completely different things. But you can paddle down the river. So they're like, "Okay, yeah, we'll paddle on the river." And they notice that the water is amazingly clean. And then Brock's like, "Hey, Misty, I know you don't like bug Pokemon. Bugs love really clear water." And she's like, "No, it's fine. I'm not afraid of bug Pokemon." And then a whole bunch of Beedrills and everything come out of the trees. And Misty freaks out, and they head back to the cabin.
Remember this, because it's important later.
Yes. So they're like, "Okay, is there another option? Because we've exhausted two of them." And he's like, "Yeah, Luna's like, you could go over Mount Kena," which is, I was wondering how you would spell Mount Kena, but it's Q-U-E-N-A, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, I was
that
a little
is
bit,
not...
it's caught off guard.
Given the Japanese that I do know, I would have expected it to be K-E-I-N-A.
Yeah, that's basically where my mind went as well. I was expecting a more traditional Japanese spelling of it, but nope. We get Q-U-E's in there because English. So we go back to Mewtwo, and he continues to talk about how clones are unlike other Pokemon and they don't belong. We're, again, getting a bit redundant here. Meowth talks about how all Pokemon see the same moon and how that's beautiful and stuff. Kind of recapping what our Meowth... the Meowth that's talking to Mewtwo is Meowth2. By the way, that's what it says on the on Bulbapedia anyway. I just called them fake Meowth in my notes. But yeah, we recap the moon thing from the end of the first movie. Everything's going well at the cabin. Colin, a hot scientist dude, and Domino, a ditzy girl, come to the cabin. Colin's like, "Hey, I'm here to study the water." And he basically gets nothing to do in the rest of the movie. Are you dropping out?
I was, yes.
Okay,
I got it fixed.
You're back again. Did you have anything you wanted to say about the...
No, I think you got it.
All right, great.
I was still able to hear. It was just jumping.
Okay, excellent. Colin came to study the water, and that's basically as much a character as he gets, except that he's hot and that girls want him. Team Rocket shows up to the fanfare of popping firecrackers, which is actually really funny. It's just like this little string of firecrackers on the ground, which kind of shows how little budget they have at this point. They're like so low on the totem pole at Team Rocket that all they can get is firecrackers. It's quite sad. Team Rocket has electricity absorbing wire, and they steal Pikachu, and they break out of the leave in a new and improved Meowth balloon, which was kind of cool. It's got rockets on the side of it and stuff.
Outside of the weather issue, this is the best plan they've ever had.
I would say so. They brought something to finally counter Pikachu, and they've got a decent mode of transportation now. But it doesn't end up super well as the balloon gets tossed around by the crazy air currents and the crew goes after them, like, because I think Team Rocket's just gonna go to the spring or whatever, right?
Yes.
So the gang goes to climb the mountain and chase after them, but then the Team Rocket's balloon crashes into the to where their line is, and then they get taken away. Like their line is attached to the balloon in this crazy set piece moment. Domino displays an impressive feat of evasion while they're climbing, and like a rock's going to run her over, and she manages to get out of the way. And this is when Domino reveals herself to be evil, which is not like a super huge payoff because we've only known her for, 10 minutes at this point?
Right, and she gave a small hint of it when Team Rocket appeared, and she was like, who are these guys?
Yeah. She's not super great at keeping her cover, but I forgot to mention, Giovanni is just so evil. Domino phones in that she sees Mewtwo, like, way in the distance, and then Giovanni gets the call, and he crushes a glass, like, in his bare hand.
He's extremely wasteful.
Yeah. I mean, when you're so rich, what's one glass to you anyway? It's probably, like, 500-year-old bourbon or something, and he's just wasteful.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it was something super good, and now it's all over the floor.
He probably just had, like, a bottle of cheap Fireball, and he picked up that glass at Walmart or something. So the Team Rocket combat unit is called in, and it's, like, way more frightening than any of the other Team Rocket stuff we've ever seen before. And Meowth makes note of this in a moment I actually really like, where he's like, where are the Meowth head balloons? It's because, you know, they've got this actual weaponry and military gear and stuff, and it's far more menacing. And I do appreciate Meowth, like, making note of, like, the stakes are... It's no longer, like, the cute Team Rocket that we've always known. This is a more... a little bit more evil.
Yeah, most definitely.
So the Black Tulip, which is another name for 009, she has like three code names in this movie, and people will refer to her as like all three of these different names throughout the movie. She gets called the Black Tulip, she gets called 009, she gets called Domino. But anyways, she throws a Black Tulip, her namesake, at Team Rocket's balloon and brings it down. And then Pikachu manages to escape after the crash.
She's an awful human.
she's truly terrible. Because, like, there's not only does she not have any remorse, she seems to really love being as bad as possible. We'll get into this later, I think.
Because she's like, hey, guys, great job on being terrible. Now I'm going to kill your balloon, and I'm going to run away.
Yep. So Clone Shoe, which is my name for the second Pikachu, even though his name's Pikachu 2, it just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Pikachu would be a better...
Pikachu's pretty good.
Pikachu,
yeah, okay. So Pikachu shows up, and he's not happy about seeing our Pikachu again, which is somewhat irrational, I'd say.
Yes, and one of the things that I noticed that made me very happy is they painstakingly made sure to have the little details that specified this is a clone Pokemon versus this is the regular Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Like how Pikachu had his little spiky ears instead of the straight cut black line, and then Charizard has like his tiger markings and all that. Mm-hmm. I was very appreciative of the acknowledgement of that.
Making,
from the first movie.
Maintaining the continuities, it's pretty strong. Like a lot of them maintain their personalities from the first movie too. Pikachu, or what did we go with?
Pikachu.
Pikachu is a little bit spunkier than Pikachu is. If you remember Sparky from the show,
yes,
it's kind of like that. You know, a little bit more edgy, a little bit more hardcore. Clone Pikachu shows up and he's hollering at Pikachu about like, hey, why'd you come here? But does he know that everyone got their memories wiped? I have to imagine, right?
I'm not sure. I think that might have been something that Mewtwo didn't tell anybody because, I mean, realistically, Mewtwo doesn't have a reason to tell any of the clone Pokemon that he did that because he's just going to take them away and hope that no one ever finds them. So... it might have just been something that he didn't think about having to tell them.
I guess they're not as highly intelligent as he is either. I wonder what the intelligence like curve looks like in Pokemon. Do you think there's information out there like that for like which Pokemon are just generally the more intelligent? Because every Pikachu we've encountered like in the anime has a personality to it, you know?
Right.
Like Meowth seem to have like a lot of personality to them. I digress. That's a thought for another time.
It's a but good yeah. digression.
Yeah, I would like to address that at some point. Just like, hey, which Pokemon seem to be like they have the most to do? I mean, we know that like Lucario can communicate telepathically, but there are telepathic Pokemon that can't speak English, like Latios and Latias. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if that's information we could locate. Anyways, so Clone Chew goes to attack Pikachu, and Mewtwo holds him back with the psychic power, saying, there's no point in fighting, they're identical, it'll just go on forever, which is basically what happened at the end of the first movie. There's like a splinter cell of clones that Clone Chew kind of brings together. They're like, hey, we're going to go to war against Team Rocket, which I think is really funny. And he's like, hey, I don't want to be on Clone Chew's like, I don't want to be on the run forever. I want to be able to live freely and appreciate all of the things that this beautiful earth has for us. And then we're given some images of like the beauty of nature, which is kind of weird. I really dug it. It's really like, art film, if that makes sense.
No. Yeah. I follow.
It's almost like, Terrence Malickian in some sense, you know, like it's, an optimistic like landscape, and I dug it. It was different than what we've seen before in Pokemon movies, and I appreciate that. So yeah,
the movie as a whole has a lot more deeper aspects to it.
Yeah, I just think there's like more grit to this movie. But yeah, so Jesse hears this whole conversation, I guess, or did Mewtwo or Meowth translate it for her? I imagine
Meowth translated everything.
Okay.
It was my one thing that I was like, you know, this was unnecessary. But I guess because Team Rocket was there, they had to have somebody translate it for the puny human brains.
I don't think that, like, Jessie says that she's always been a misfit since she was a little girl. And, well, maybe you shouldn't have been a criminal then. How about that? You ever consider that? What, we know her backstory, right? Wasn't she, was it James was super rich?
James was super rich. Jesse was in like a prep school or something like that, and all the other, if I remember correctly, all the other girls were like super mean to her at first.
Okay. Fair enough. So I guess there is precedent there. I just kind of like, if you wanted to be accepted, you could have taken a different career path, perhaps be a doctor or a youth group minister, any number of potential careers that are more respectable than being with Team Rocket. But I guess she probably internalized most of that abuse she took when she was young.
Yeah, and I mean, Jesse is a prime example of a person turning to the first thing that accepts them. So Team Rocket accepted her despite her being as she believed to be a misfit. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it was worth devoting herself to because they accepted who she was. Even if they still call her a failure within Team Rocket, they never kick them out.
Yeah, she gets to keep the uniform. But yeah, I guess I never really thought about that. That's actually pretty good. That's pretty good, Pokemon. This is when like they were really into the like into the canon and cared about the things that happened in the show, in the movies, if that makes sense. That's pretty
yeah.
good. Anyways, let's move on from that nice little diversion. That was good. Giovanni plans to attack at sunrise, which is pretty hardcore. I don't know why he decided to do it at sunrise, but it seems kind of arbitrary to me because they're going to be able to bring him down no matter what, I'd imagine. So the gang
yeah.
builds a canoe out of a log, which is pretty smart. That's pretty good thinking. That was Luna's idea, though, because no, I can't imagine anyone in the gang coming up with something that rational. And then this is where Team Rocket gets locked up by they get locked up by actual Team Rocket, right?
Yes. Well, first they get locked up by Mewtwo's clone Pokemon friends.
Right.
And Meowth is all like, if I do my job translating for them, for the humans, then you guys get to go free eventually.
He sells them out pretty quick. But I guess he does ultimately want to like help him. His goal is to like help him out until he gets to have some pull and then they can have Team Rocket released. But yeah, there's so many narrative beats in this movie. Gosh darn, man.
Yeah, and at some point, I don't remember when it was. It was a little bit earlier than this, but it was a quote that I wrote down and then forgot to mention. Meowth says something about... No, was it Meowth or was it James? One of those two said something about it feeling like a sequel to a movie that they missed.
That is... James, I think. And I thought that was, again, it's a cute little throwback, and they really make a ton of references to, like, their memories being gone in this movie, like, throughout the course of the entire thing. It's almost a central plot point that they don't know that they've been through this before. Yeah, it's a cute, fun little line. Again, it's like, the jokes are simple, but they're more effective than any of the other jokes in the other movies.
I would argue that the jokes in this movie are more effective than the jokes in the first movie.
Absolutely. I think this is the funniest of the movies so far. Cause you get the drying pan line, you get the line about, you know, it feels like a sequel to a movie is missed. It's, you know, like little meta humor. It's good. I think it's effective. So it's time for the clones to head off to war. And with that note, we're going to go to a commercial break.
Hey, this is Ethan from Puckle Movie Club with a quick commercial break. Just letting you know that if you send an email to pucklepodcast@gmail.com, we will answer your questions. So ask us questions about what we think about movies, tell us what you think about movies, even just send us whatever you're up to. Gmail account is pucklepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Thatch, and I wanted to let you know how you can improve your Puckle experience. First, you can come to PucklePodcast.com, where we have a chat box and forums where you can talk to many other Pokemon fans who also listen to the show. You can keep up to date on the latest Puckle news by following us on our Twitter, liking our Facebook page, subscribing to our subreddit, and following our Tumblr. Don't forget to review us on iTunes, though. It helps us find more people to come and hang out with us, and we can have larger tournaments because of it. And if you're feeling generous, we also have a Patreon, where you can donate in return for some awesome rewards. And as always... thanks for listening and for all the support you give us. Catch you guys on the flip-flop.
And we're back here to break down the second half of the movie. We got some stretching in during the break, worked on some technical things. We were having some recording issues with Skype and all that, so Locke's going to be phoning in from his actual phone. So pardon the slight drop in quality, but as long as you can hear him, it's all that matters to me.
Mobile correspondent Locke reporting in.
Live on scene. We've got hot breaking news from Locke.
Yeah, I climbed the Kana Mountain just for you.
What's the wind like up there?
It's awful. I've seen at least 3 Meowth balloons flying by. It might have been the same one, though.
Shh. Got caught up in a spiral or something. So anyways, back to the actual narrative. So when we left our heroes, they were making their way down river, the Purity River, in their makeshift boat. And so they make it to the spring that's the source of the Purity River. And then when they get there, they talk about the moral implications of having a resource like that available to the public. Because it's this super pristine place that like apparently has healing properties. But if you make it open to the public... it's going to become polluted and lose what makes it so magical.
What I found funny about this section was it's the one point of the movie where I feel like Luna's personality kind of shifts, because she's totally gung-ho about being like, hey, taste this awesome water, guys. Mm-hmm. And now she's all like, but don't like let people know about the awesome water.
I guess the thing is that, like, when they were downriver, it wasn't actually going to affect the spring itself. You know, they're just taking the runoff from the spring. So that's probably
true.
But this is, like, the heart, you know, this is where the source is, you know, and you got to protect that. I think it's a pretty heady issue for a Pokemon movie to have, like, the moral implications of making this accessible to everyone. Because it could have this amazing benefit to everyone around the world and... be like a medical miracle, as Colin says, but at the same time, you could end up destroying what made it a miracle in the first place.
Yes, and this is one of the first of a few current event parallels that you get to see when you look towards our world with the North Dakota Access Pipeline and how Luna shows extreme deference for the cleanliness of this pure water, and we're currently fighting for that exact thing in North Dakota.
It's topical, man. It's relevant. It's a timeless movie because there will always be issues where, like, hey, what do we destroy this natural resource for our own benefit? And I think according to this movie, the answer is no. But we'll get into that at the end of the movie. So back with the clones, they start to lose the Splinter Cell of clones lose their battle against Team Rocket badly. Like, they're all wiped out and in Pokeballs within like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, and I want Rocket Balls.
They look hardcore.
They're pretty sweet. Like, as far as evil organization Pokeballs go, they are top notch.
Oh yeah, they're just so evil looking. So yeah, Team Rocket's using like these energy balls fired out of like helicopters to drain the Pokemon of their energy, and it's making them like super easy to capture. And it's just it's like cheating, man.
It is.
Team
it's
Rocket doesn't play
cheating
by the rules.
Yeah, and 009 says something about that at one point. She's like, I know trainers catch them in Pokeballs, but I like our way better. And I'm like, wow, you're just so evil.
She's such a monster. So yeah, Mewtwo confronts Giovanni, like, after seeing the Splinter Cell of clones get taken out, and Giovanni hollers about how sick nasty all of his new tech is, and there's no way he can resist. And then we get another wave of Team Rocket combat unit people who fly in hang gliders and blimps, and their express purpose is to capture the rest of the clones. And this is supposed to like goad Mewtwo into turning himself over, because if he doesn't, all of his clone buddies will be captured.
And it works.
It totally works. Mewtwo decides to turn himself in, and 009 threatens at one point that she doesn't care if the clones are destroyed, because they can always make more, which is like really hard. That's quite the threat to make.
I know. And this is, I mean, she even goes as far as shooting Pikachu and Pikachu with her little energy blast tulip thing.
Yeah.
And they're at the point where Mewtwo surrenders. They're just like, no, don't do the thing. And it's a pretty tough scene.
It's intense. Yeah, so Mewtwo gives himself in, and Giovanni has this energy ball containment thing, and Mewtwo walks into it, and then Giovanni talks about how evil he is, and just how much he loves being bad, and how he wants to take over the world and stuff. At this point, the Pikachus, Pikachu and Pikachu, have been taken out by 009, as you mentioned. And Colin's like, hey, we should try to use the natural spring water that we took to revive the Pikachus. And it totally works. But then 009 locks up everyone. Everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it's comical the amount of people that they have in this cage.
They have a full-grown Gyarados. 50.
What's that?
They have a full-grown Gyarados.
Yeah, and every protagonist is locked up in this one cell. It's quite funny. And then Team Rocket immediately starts constructing their new base. Which is, I'm really jealous, because Team Rocket can pull together a base in like under a day, and Ohio has been under construction for like 10 years now. So how do we hire evil people to make our infrastructure? I digress.
Well, I mean, and if they were half as efficient in the games as they are in this movie, then Team Rocket would have won.
Oh my gosh. They have so much technology, and they can just capture whatever they want. Like, they're taking down full, like, pseudo-legendary Pokemon like it's nothing. Like, Gyarados is dropped in 2 seconds. Like, how are you supposed to deal with that?
With love.
With love and understanding, of course. So at this point, the bug Pokemon come to the rescue, because Team Rocket is already starting to pollute their water supply, which is like the thing that they like about this area so much, is that the water is so clean. Is that actually a thing about bugs? Is they like clean water? I thought they liked standing water that's all super gross and murky.
I think it's... I think that it's a twist that they played on it, because I think you're correct. At least I know mosquitoes. If there's standing water anywhere around my house, I have to get rid of it because there will be mosquitoes in it.
Absolutely.
And I hate mosquitoes.
You know, I'm a big fan personally. I love those bloodsuckers and how they get all these welts over the summer and how they just have their horrible swimming larva in every puddle near me. That's like my favorite thing. Anyways, Jesse and James pull one over on 009 because she's like, hey, she's having them clean the floor of the new of their new facility, but they do such a good job. The floor is totally slippery, and she eats it. She falls on her butt.
Yes, this is as soon as they start escaping. This is when Domino ends up falling over like a domino, mm-hmm. and one of the second best puns in the entire movie happens. She falls headfirst into the cleaning bucket, and James goes, oh, you're looking a little pale. And I'm like, that is great.
It's very strong puns in this movie. We go back to Giovanni and Mewtwo and their struggle. And at this point, Ash and Brock are just totally, they're like, okay, we're just going to start tackling these robots making the force field because we got no better ideas. We're completely tapped.
We have an army of Pokemon that haven't even been called out, but we're just going to start punching machinery.
Yep, whatever. it's useless. But turns out, it's useless. It does absolutely nothing. And then at that point, Mewtwo cranks it to 11. He's like, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to use the last of my energy. Blah! And then he turns into speed lines. He becomes all wavy, and it looks really modern and weird for some reason.
That's true.
Because you've seen it before if you watch like Gurren Lagann or anything, like when characters become all speed liney and all of their outlines are zigzags.
But, yes.
It's too much for him, and breaking out just completely taps him of all of his energy. And then Ash takes Mewtwo to the spring, which rejuvenates Mewtwo.
And we get that moral quandary again, where the professor guy, whose name I never got because
Colin
is all like, but if you throw him in there, it might contaminate the water and for the humans, because humans need it.
But if Mewtwo doesn't get thrown in the water, then this entire place will be destroyed by Team Rocket.
I mean, yeah. Ash doesn't even bother with a logical argument, though. He just goes, but Mewtwo needs it now! And throws Mewtwo.
It's true, he does need it now. Mewtwo and Giovanni have a final showdown, and then is it Team Rocket falls asleep or gets knocked out or whatever?
It's, Mewtwo bursts from the water after having, like, a dream, and then he's all like, if this water heals me like it heals real Pokemon, then I must have a place in this world. And he comes out all like Kaioken Super Saiyan going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, hey guys, I'm going to end this right now. And literally he ends it right now. Because
mm-hmm.
the next scene is the wreckage of Team Rocket and the entire spring and all the Pokemon just gone.
The scene of Mewtwo coming out of the water and going all Super Saiyan is pretty great in terms of, like, in the canon of Pokemon Super Saiyan moments. I'd say it's probably one of the better ones.
Yes.
It's better than Ash becoming a Super Saiyan. Actually, I don't know. That has its own value. But in terms of ones that are supposed to be taken seriously, I'd say this one is the most effective.
Yes.
So night has fallen, and they wake up the next day, and all of the water is gone, and like, where'd the water go? And Mewtwo's like, hey, I put it under Mount Kena so that nobody can touch it anymore. I guess it's a decent plan. It wouldn't be my first choice, but he could be like a
protector. I would never guess that. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
My first instinct would not be like, he must have gone underground. It would be like, no, he's just gone. We're never going to find him.
Yeah. But he could be like a protector. I don't know. Like, because if he cares about it this much, and if it's that, like, it's the thing that makes him realize that he has a place in this world, you think he would want to maintain it and keep it cool.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, so he moved underground Kana, and then Colin has, like, a little vial of the water left, and he's like, hey, maybe I could synthesize some of this in a lab. which is, like, so if you could have done that, then why would you make this a, like, a resort where people go to anyway?
Yeah, this is Colin's moment of realizing that you do not have to exploit the wealth of nature to further humans when you can do a little more work to achieve the same goal and still preserve it.
Well, I guess I don't have to destroy the planet, you know, like, but whatever. I guess it works out for him. And then Mewtwo's like, hey, I'm going to erase everyone's memories again. And then Meowth 2 convinces him not to. He's like, hey, how about you just erase the memories of people who don't like us? Because these guys are our friends.
Yeah, and Ash and Misty are all like, yeah, we should totally be allowed to remember. And Mewtwo decides, okay, that's what we'll do then. And he gives one of the best lines that has been in any Pokemon movie.
Do you want to hit me with it?
Yes. He says that basically that the past cannot haunt them because the shame of that past is not ours. It belongs to those who use that past to set us apart.
It's deep, man.
Which I think is super powerful and, again, ties into current events with the current division in our country.
Yeah. Yeah, we decided we weren't afraid to get a little bit topical this episode, but yeah, there is relevancy to, like, it's not our shame. It's the people that keep us apart that should be the ones who are there. It's their past that's shameful, and that we belong in this world like everyone else. Which is, it's a nice message. It's good.
Yeah, it's the people who can't accept other people shouldn't be ashamed of the people who can't. Because it is their shame to bear, not ours.
Yeah.
Because we have moved on. We have succeeded where they are failing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not... Anyways.
Just so, be good to each other, people.
Be excellent to each other, in the words of
Abraham
Lincoln.
Just be excellent.
So, yeah, the clones leave again. Mewtwo, this is... It's basically exactly how the first movie ended, where they all go flying away into the night.
Yeah.
So their story's done, and then Colin and Luna get together, which is fun, I guess. It doesn't really... Colin and Luna as characters don't really amount to much.
No.
But whatever. It's cute, I guess.
Oh, and Ash says something about remembering this time.
Yes, which leads me to believe that Mewtwo told them about last time, but it never happens. Apparently that's a dub exclusive thing, by the way. I looked that up.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Or maybe Ash remembered the whole time.
Who knows? Ash hears Mewtwo talking, and he's like, hey, I thought I heard something. But maybe it was just my memory. And then the movie ends, which is it's kind of a weird way to end in terms of, like, that's not the strongest line in the movie.
No, this is the weakest part of the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah, because then, like, the clones fly away and Ash just says something stupid and it's all kind of like, oh, man, really?
We did not need that one little scene to mess up an otherwise excellent movie.
So do you want to, let's break this down. Let's analyze this. Like, so what do you think this movie does right?
It does everything a sequel needs to do to improve upon the story of the original.
Mm-hmm.
Other than having to have a montage, which was probably not necessary at the beginning to remind you what happened. Mm-hmm. If without it, some people would have been left behind. So I understand why they include that, but it does enough in exposition to explain why Mewtwo's here even without that montage and why he's hiding from humans. It just does a lot of things correct. It hangs on to the through line from the previous movie without beating you over the head with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it expounds upon it, because the whole point in the first movie was humans suck. And the whole point in this movie is humans don't understand us, which I think is a significant indication of the growth that Mewtwo continues to have throughout this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right in terms of, like, it works as a sequel, and then it takes the characters from the first movie and it has them, like, evolve in some ways, and you
yes.
kind of see, like, the evolution in Pikachu and Meowth 2 in terms of, like, they seem to be Mewtwo's closest allies, which is really cool, and, like, they're is almost as consorts, and I don't know. It gives them a new role. And Mewtwo continuing to evolve and, like, understand the world is interesting. But if I have to make a complaint about this movie, it's that the storylines don't come together in a way that's very satisfying to me.
I can understand that.
I think that the story about, like, this magical spring and protecting it is almost, like, secondary to Mewtwo's storyline, so that when the two come together, it just feels like it's lessening Mewtwo's arc, if that makes sense.
But yeah, I think, much like many of the Pokemon movies, where a legendary takes the primary role, the writers decided we have to give Ash and Co. something to do.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Manaphy, where they had, like, Ash and it was May at that point doing something completely useless to the main story, mm-hmm. because Manaphy was already off dealing with stuff that was important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think that they have issues with, like, giving them something to do that's relevant. And I think that I don't think it's bad in its own right. Like, I think it's a pretty functional little side story. Like, it would be a decent episode, you know?
Right.
But then when you expand it to the course of a whole movie, and then you have, like, a way more interesting storyline going on from Mewtwo the whole time, it just kind of loses its zest, you know? And I think a part of that might just be that the location itself isn't super distinct, you know, like what is it? It's a spring and, like, a mountain. And I don't know. It's not a super visually interesting place for them to be, but at the same time, like, all of the story beats work well. It's funnier than any of the previous Pokemon movies that we've watched, I'd say. I don't know. I think the strength of writing is stronger in this, but it just could have used, like, another twist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can understand that. As far as Pokemon movies that go, though, I feel that this is one of the most successful overall.
Absolutely. I don't say these things in terms of, like, I say this, these criticisms are less serious than the criticisms I have of previous Pokemon movies, because it functions better than the previous movies do. It's less disjointed.
Yeah.
It's more coherent. And I think because of that, it kind of leaves me wanting, like, I just wish it had been that little extra step, you know? Like, if it just, I get the movie's only an hour and 5 minutes, right? So, like,
yeah, it is not very long.
I wonder if that almost sort of limits how in depth their story could have been if they wanted to get that Mewtwo story out. I don't know. It's almost there. It's, like, so close to being, like, one of the best Pokemon movies. I mean, it probably is, just in terms of, like, from my perspective, just in terms of coherency and being a good watch. Like, there's never a point in this movie where you're like, oh, groan, this is, like, the most boring part of the movie. It all moves pretty fast and well. And,
right. It is definitely not Manaphy's movie.
Certainly not, no.
But I think... I think one of the highest praises that we can really give it is the fact that we're not comparing it, we're not rating it compared to other Pokemon movies. We're looking at it and coming at it as a movie in itself,
yeah,
compared to movies as a whole, not just Pokemon movies,
yeah,
which means that it is head and shoulders above a majority of the ones available.
Absolutely. And like most of my gripes are with just the effectiveness of the like not the narrative, but the messages are there. It's just like at times they ring a bit hollow. It's again, it's so close. It's so close to being head and shoulders above all of the Pokemon movies, but it's just a little bit off in some places. I just think that the side characters are a little bit weaker. And if it had one of the two elements, like a stronger B plot for Ash and company, or if it had a stronger set of side characters who were a bit more memorable, I think that would have put it over the top. But yeah, in its own right, it's a good watch. Like I got a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, I think it's honestly, given the first movie is probably the best one, this is probably my favorite. I feel like overall it has just the most rewatchability.
I think it's the darkest, if that makes sense.
It is. If not dark, it's definitely the heaviest.
Yes, it's handled seriously. In spite of being, having like the funniest lines, it's just the actual conflict that Mewtwo is having is serious. It's a real like internal and external conflict that's compelling, and that like he's struggling with his own. Like, I don't have a place in this world. And then Giovanni pops up again to, like, remind him that it's a reminder to him, like, hey, this is not a safe world for me at this point in time. And it's strong. It works.
Yes, very much so. And the fact that Giovanni is such a clear externalization of Mewtwo's worries.
Absolutely.
About the world is... The writers, they needed to use these writers for every movie that came afterwards, and they didn't, and that was a loss on Pokemon's part, because this was a wonderful continuation of a very intelligent story, and it's sad to see what the movies later become, and the sort of stuff we have to sit through.
I think... It was really, really smart of them to do a sequel about one of the more interesting facets of the original movie, which is the Mewtwo is not of this world, and he was created for the purpose of destruction. And how do you get over your nature, but like what? The destiny that was laid out before you, and like, can you overcome that? And the struggle that is—it's strong. It's compelling. I like it.
Yes, very
yeah,
much.
At the risk of sounding redundant, it's just narratively deeper and thematically stronger than previous Pokemon movies we've covered. So we've got one email today, and it's from R Sigma, and here we go. Puckle Movie Club, yo. That's a good way to start an email. Daisy Oak! She's probably the character that appears at the table with the rest of the group. This is in reference to last month's episode when we discussed at Pokemon Origins. There was a girl who had appeared at Professor Oak's table. And then R-Sigma was positing that's Daisy Oak. It took me 5 minutes to remember her name with no outside help, to be fair. In the remakes during Gens 3 and 4, they tried to make a memorable character. She was given an entry into the Fame Checker in Fire Red and Leaf Green, and gives you Blue's cell number in Heart Gold Soul Silver. Besides that, Origins was a solid series to celebrate the old, as well as usher us into Gen 6. Keep up the good work, R Sigma. Yeah, thank you for your email, R Sigma. That's a decent insight there. I gave up on trying to figure out who that was. So yeah,
I didn't know that she was ever named, so I appreciate the information.
Yeah, your guess is as good as any.
And I think that's probably the strongest guess. We have another email, but it's relevant to The Rise of Darkrai. So please forgive me. I'm going to save that for when we cover that movie. That's from Antonin. I got your email, man. It's in here. It's coming, I swear. So yeah, when we cover Rise of Darkrai, we'll cover your email. But yeah, thanks for sending emails. You can just send them to pucklepodcast@gmail.com. And let us know. Put Puckle Movie Club in the title or the topic of the email to let us know that that's for us, and we'll read them on the podcast. And next month, we're going to be covering Generations. So
okay,
yeah,
okay,
that's going to be pretty hot. Hopefully, that's going to be another super positive episode.
Yeah, I mean, given what we've seen so far. But I'm not going to go into any details because I want to save it for next month.
I'm going to bomb through it as if it's like a movie or something, which is what I did for Origins. Yeah, I've seen like two episodes with Thatch because he's like, hey, you got to check this out because this is hot, when I was visiting him. And turns out he was totally right. It seems really entertaining.
They are all extremely good.
Yeah, so if you have any comments or thoughts on Pokemon Generation, send them in for next month. And then Rise of Darkrai will be the first thing we cover when we come back next year in January. So, yeah, thank you for being with me on this episode, Locke.
No problem. Thank you for having me on this episode, Ethan.
And that's going to do it from Beneath the Ruins of Alf. I've been Ethan.
And I've been Locke.
It's closing time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy.
Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.